Rachel Carroll, June 10th, 2020.
Start with the fact that it's really weird being in this room, which is a funny thing to say because I go to church here every Saturday in the sanctuary, but I don't remember the last time I've been in this room with this many people from Church on the Rock. And I think it's a little even weirder because Carissa's here, and so it's like this whole flashback from like my entire childhood. For those of you guys that don't know me, my name is Rachel. I grew up at this church. I went here for 27 years, until 2018, which is almost my entire life, minus the past couple years. So it's very surreal to be here with you guys, but thank you for coming. It's an honor to be able to just share a little bit about my life, and I'm really just praying that whatever comes out of my mouth, because we always know we plan things and it doesn't happen the way we planned, right? So all the notes on my phone really could mean nothing at the end of the night. But I was just praying that whatever it is, whatever has happened in my life, that it would somehow like hit your heart, that whatever it is that God's been doing in me would resonate with you, whether it's just a piece of my story or maybe you're like, wow, your story is really similar to mine, that there would just be something that God would just, you know, do in your heart. And I think for me, I didn't tend to think about my testimony as being important because growing up in the church, it wasn't like I had what I thought of when I was younger as like a cool testimony. And like growing up, I realized that sometimes it's just as much a testimony to have been raised in the church and to not experience certain things as it is to come out of the things that seem like so crazy that God's brought a lot of other people out of. And I think a big part of my story is the fact that like being different is okay. And I'm gonna read this quote. It's actually how I planned on starting out until I was like, this is surreal. This quote's from Marianne Williamson, and it says, "Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. It's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that others won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others." And I just love that quote. Like, I see it all the time in different places, and every time I screenshot it and I save it, and it's one of the things that's been on my phone that's been transferred over from phone to phone, because it's just, that's such a powerful quote to think about the fact that maybe our fear is misplaced. Or maybe we think it's one thing and it's really not. And that sometimes maybe our fear is more about our potential or what happens if we succeed rather than what happens if we fail. Another thing that you guys may be familiar with, as I know some of the Bible studies have covered it before, that when we share our testimony, the word testimony means do it again. And the fact that when we share what God's been doing in us, that we're practically begging God to come do it again in somebody else. My full name is Rachel Elizabeth Carroll. Many of you might know my parents. They go to church here. Keith and Kathy Carroll. Been very blessed to be raised in a household with them as parents. I don't really know what my life would be like if I didn't have them. Even in adulthood, I don't want to know what my life would be like if I didn't have them. But the reason why I tell you my whole name is because when I found out my whole name, it made my life make a lot more sense. So my first name means gentle lamb. And my mom used to say it all the time when we were younger and we didn't understand why I wasn't quite as gentle as she thought I would be. I always joke that my dad at some point thought he would have a boy and never did, but he had me, so it was okay. Because I was always the one playing sports, doing something. I never broke a bone, so I didn't quite get that far. I definitely sprained my ankles a couple times. Later on in life, tore my ACL. So we had a couple of those injuries in there, but Not quite as crazy as Rough and Tumble Boys, if some of you guys may have raised them, you might know. But I definitely wrestled my dad in the kitchen, pinned him down to the ground multiple times, things like that, you know. So my middle name means dedicated to God or consecrated to God, which is always something that has been dear to my heart in the fact that I've just kind of always known that he was real and that he was here because I was raised in a Christian home, and I don't really remember a time where I didn't believe in God. I remember the time that I got saved. I was 7 years old, and it was one of those fire and brimstone things. We were out of town, and it was one of those elevators going down to hell, and I was like, I don't want to go there. That devil is scary. Those kinds of things. But obviously working out my salvation so that it isn't quite the, you know, fire insurance or, but that was definitely the start of me kind of understanding what it meant, heaven and hell, and how real it is. My last name means fierce warrior. So you have gentle lamb and fierce warrior, and everything made a little more sense. But I struggled with that still, and I was like, what does that look like? Because I looked at the girls on the soccer team, and I was like, how do they play soccer really hard and rough, and they're slide tackling each other and all this stuff, and then the next day they're all like glammed up, and I'm like, I don't understand. Like, it's like two different things. And so I struggled with that most of my life, of what those different aspects look like in me. And now I find it to be a compliment when people give me those characteristics and they're like, but you have this and this, and I've never seen it in the same person before, and I'm like, thank you. I don't know how else to be. So, but I share with you guys my name because I feel like it does tell a lot about me. And if you know me, maybe that makes sense. And if you don't know me, maybe it'll make sense as I'm talking. Okay, so this is where I pull out my phone. So as I said, I was born and raised in this church. I actually started going here when I was 6 months old. So some of you guys may have changed my diapers. Some of you guys may have known me when I was in here. And I actually spent a lot of time in this room. It's definitely been different colors, and there's been different things that have happened on the walls. There were superheroes at one point over here, which was like the coolest thing when I was little. I grew up even helping out. I never would have considered myself like a late bloomer, but I feel like a lot of my life kind of shows that. I always wanted to wait until I felt ready enough to do something. And as I've gotten a little older, I realize that sometimes you just have to do it while you're still scared or while you're still afraid, and just know that in God we don't have to be that way. One of those interesting stories was I was given the opportunity. At the time, it did not feel like an opportunity. It felt like torture to stand in front of the entire sixth grade class and to read an essay that I wrote for the DARE program, which is, I don't know if that's still around anymore, but it's like, resist drugs. And there's a couple other things I think that it goes into, but it was this big campaign that they did in all the schools, and it was very popular in the 90s. And apparently I wrote a really good essay, and it got chosen, and I didn't really have a choice on whether I wanted to present it or not in front of the whole class. And for those of you guys who aren't really fond of reading things in front of other people, as you start going and you trip over your words or you lose your place and you're a little nervous, that was me constantly. And so I didn't want to do it, but I was chosen and I wasn't going to say no. So I walked up there and I basically said, God, I don't know how to do this, but I need your help. And I read it flawlessly. And I had this crazy, like, peace, which I can only attribute to being like the peace that passes understanding that's talked about in scripture. And little moments like that have happened to me over my life where I'm like, I know God was there. I know God was there. So I don't remember a time he wasn't there. I just remember these little moments of when he showed up. Let's see. My dad was actually a pastor before I was born. And when I was born, they no longer could take care of everything with having a newborn. And at this point in time, they were taking chairs and equipment up the stairs. And doing all kinds of stuff to set up church every week. And my dad came to the conclusion, and I was going to let my mom correct me, but she's not here, so came to the conclusion that I need to focus on my family right now, and I need to lay down pastoring a church. And so they encouraged everybody who was there to come here, which at this point was New Covenant Fellowship. And so they came here, brought me, and that was part of the history of them being here. Well, there was some land that they had from that previous church, and my dad felt like he was supposed to give it to another organization because there was already property here. And I tell you that just because we left the church for like, I don't know, a year, year and a half to go do this thing. My dad felt like he found a church that he was supposed to give it to. He wanted to be with the people and know them and make sure it was what was supposed to happen. So when we left and came back, it was like all the kids grew up because all the kids, I was probably 10, 11, all the kids at that point in time were homeschooled. And me and my sister were some of the only kids that went to public school. So everyone got to know each other and got to hang out for those couple of years, which are very formative years. So we came back and I just felt kind of awkward and like, I know these people, but I don't know them because now they're grown up and now I don't know, you know, who they are and you got to reacclimate. So I still stayed back in kids' church and way past time of when I should have been back in kids' church. but then I ended up helping out with worship and I had like, I got to help kids find stuff in their Bibles. And so I was loving life back here, you know. Finally, my mom convinced me to come into the main sanctuary. She's like, okay, just once a month. I'm like, oh, fine, okay. And slowly ended up being in the main sanctuary. A lot of that, I feel like, is attributed to me. My dad forced me to go to youth group. He actually forced me to go to one of the last, like, fire conferences, or it was a specific conference that had been going on, and he convinced me to go. And I met Mandy Tapper, which some of you guys might be familiar with. I met Carissa. I met a bunch of different people in that span of time where youth group now became fun. And then at that point, youth group and church was like my home. I went, I can't tell you how many days a week I was at church. I ended up going to 3 different youth groups because they all met on different nights, so why not? All different people, all different expressions of who God is, and I was like, this is awesome. I love this. I dropped one of them and ended up coming to Church on the Rocks youth group and Freedom's youth group. And at that time, Church on the Rock was just changing its name, and all the youth were like revolting. We're like, no, it's been New Covenant Fellowship our whole lives. So like, we don't like this new change. Now it's funny for me to think back that it was New Covenant Fellowship because it's been so long that it's been Church on the Rock. But youth group was now my home. And then at that point, when I got in trouble, it was then threatened that youth group would be taken away from me. And I was like, how can you do that? You're taking church away from me? It worked. So, let's see. During that time, I went to the prayer retreat at the very beginning of it. And that's when I started going to Freedom because I met all the kids that went there. And that's when I was baptized in the Holy Spirit. And that was a very, like, intense moment for me because I feel like God had been, like, pursuing me and wanting to give me gifts that I didn't understand and I was kind of afraid of. Because everyone else to have it was okay. But for me to have it was a little scary. Like, I grew up with my dad walking into the kitchen and, like, praying in tongues as he's making his coffee in the morning. So, like, that wasn't, an odd thing. Like, as we were growing up was when, I don't know if you would call it the renewal, or when all the stuff was happening with the tab, and, like, the Holy Spirit was just doing crazy things, and people's bodies were reacting in ways that they didn't know how to control. And I would walk out of kids' church, and my mom would be on the floor, laughing hysterically with a modesty cloth over. And my dad would say, okay, we gotta wait till mom's done before we can go to lunch. So like that stuff was not unfamiliar to me as a concept, but for me as a person, that was unfamiliar and scary. So I remember a couple of different times where I felt like the Holy Spirit was like doing stuff in me, but I was like, nope, I don't want that. I don't know what it is. I don't want it. So at this particular time, it was kind of the time where I said, God, I don't care anymore. I don't care what it does to me. Just do it. And for me, it was a little more like a flood rather than, I think it had just built up for so long that it just needed to get out, like, instead of being some people's experience with being, you know, a couple words here, a couple words there, or whatever their expression is of it. So a lot of times, by the time me and God agree that something's going to happen, it happens really fast and very intensely. but that's kind of been my whole life. I don't really do things half-heartedly. It's either going to happen or it's not. So at that point, I ended up becoming an assistant leader at two different youth groups because apparently one wasn't enough for me. So I helped out at Freedom's Youth Group, and I helped out at Church and Rock's Youth Group. And at that point in time, I started going to Fire Dweller, which was our prayer meeting that we had on Friday nights, and I didn't care. I was going to skip all the football games and go to the prayer meeting. And that's where I found a lot of my friends, which is interesting. That's where I met a lot of people that go to City of Refuge, which is the church that I attend. And I say this full time because for a while, like I said, I didn't care. I wanted to go wherever God was and wherever, like, people were loving Jesus. And so I often attended multiple churches at the same time for years of time. Different ministries, different things. I didn't care. So Fire Dweller was a big part of my life for a while. I ended up becoming a prayer leader at one point in time. Then I ended up, because of Freedom's Youth Group, I ended up helping lead a Bible study in a group treatment home, which is like a detention center. So there's teen boys ages 12 to 15, and they all did something like a minor offense. So it was a low-level facility. A lot of it was like doing drugs or stealing something. And it was basically a way for them, they were in the foster care system, to be put in a place where they would be taken care of in all the different ways that they could take care of these boys, even with the criminal charges that they have against them. So I started going there with some people from Freedom, and a couple years later, the woman who was leading it decided that she didn't want to lead it anymore. And so at 18, I decided that I was going to be leading it because it was either going to happen or it wasn't going to happen. So I went there, it was once a week at one point in time, and then it ended up being every other week. And that's where I learned a lot of stuff about ministry that I never thought were things. Because some days we would drive up to Coco and they would tell us, well, you know what, one of the boys ran away, so you can't come in. And that was a little disappointing to drive all that way and not be able to do anything. It was also the place where I learned how to be very flexible with ministry, because as I would share, the boys either weren't paying attention or something would happen and we would have to leave, or our time would be cut short because we got there and the kids were still in showers and we had to wait till they were done, so there was enough people to watch all of them and sit with us. It was very interesting. There's all sorts of things that happened with that ministry, and I was really blessed to be able to be a part of it for as long as I was, because I learned so much about just listening to the Holy Spirit and going with the flow, because the kids' favorite questions were, do you believe in the Illuminati, and can you smoke weed? And those questions were asked almost every single week without fail. And so we would try to get them like back into the topic. But at the same time, there were such amazing things that happened. At one point, we had three different kids that were praying in tongues in the facility for the first time. So they allowed us to do things that I never would have thought I would be allowed to do in a public facility, like run by the government, you know. But a lot of the staff members that were there brought the kids to church. And so we kind of had free reign. They trusted us and let us do kind of whatever we wanted, which was awesome. So that was an amazing experience. I stopped doing that because I felt like God had kind of put it on my heart to let go of it, and I was really confused. But at that point in time, I actually got approached by the pastors here if I wanted to lead the youth group. And I skipped a part. So in 2011, we started a young adults group here. I did not intend to lead it, but that ended up happening. Not quite accidentally, but we started with like a group of us and then slowly dwindled down. And then I was kind of the point person. And that was also a really fun experience in ministry. It was very different from youth group and from the detention center. And each experience that I've had has been so different in my experience in relating with people, but also in relating with God and learning, like, how to teach people and how to express the things God's teaching me. And I'm going to tell you guys a couple other things, but then I want to express the reason why any of this matters. So I moved out of my parents' house when I was 24, and I moved in with a group of girls that went to City of Refuge. And I had been going to City of Refuge, but I stopped going there on Saturday nights because we had young adults, and the young adults were hanging out together on Saturday nights, and I wanted to make sure to facilitate that community. Even though it wasn't our normal meeting night, we would watch movies and we would hang out, and that's when all the conversations, all the real life stuff would happen. And that was a really cool way to build our group. So I stopped going to City of Refuge on Saturday nights until I moved in with my roommates. And when I moved in with my roommates, we weren't quite hanging out as much on Saturday nights as a group anymore. It was different people. So I started going to City of Refuge. And so for 3 years, I went to City of Refuge and Church on the Rock at the same time. So Saturday nights I was in this building, Sunday mornings I was in this building. Sometimes, not necessarily hours apart, depends on how long we eat dinner afterwards. So it depends on how late I was out. And then back in the building again the next day. And then usually having young adults in the evening. So it was just like back to back to back to back. But I didn't care because I loved it. Sometimes it was tiring, but for me, I love people. So once I got in the room with people, it didn't matter anymore. Fast forward, August of 2018, I turned in the keys to the house with my roommates and the church on the same day. And that was a crazy feeling. And it was almost like things were cultivating all at the same time. God had done so much in that year and had brought me through a process of what was next for me and what that looks like. And there's all different reasons on why I can say that I moved from Church on the Rock to City Refuge, but most of it is because I feel like I found my tribe. And I feel like that's such a cliche word now sometimes, but at the same time, like, it's very true. And so some of you guys might have found your tribe here. Maybe that's why you're here tonight, because this is a group of people that, like, you resonate with and the group of people that you learn with. And I love that there's all different ages in this room. I love that there's different years of experience and of knowledge, and I'm sure that you guys have been through so many different, life events as well. And so for me, it was interesting because there was kind of a suspicion that I was going to leave. I never thought I was going to leave. I was completely like, no, like, I'm going to be here forever. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. But there's a couple of different instances, which I'm not going to go into. Feel free to ask me later if you'd like to, of God saying, like, no, this is where you're going. This is where I have you, and I have purpose for you here. And so it's been really cool over the past couple years of people pinpointing specific events and examples and saying, like, I know why God brought you to our church. And that's, like, so heartwarming to hear, like, especially in the hard times. A month or two after I started going to City of Refuge, another thing that we never thought was going to happen was I joined the senior leadership team. And so I kept saying, like, I promise I didn't leave this leadership team to go to that one. Like, that wasn't the intention. But, you know, God does whatever he wants. So there's five of us on the leadership team. I'm really sad that Alicia wasn't able to be here to lead worship for you guys tonight. Alicia and her husband Alberto are, like, the senior leaders. Alberto doesn't even like that title because he likes the fact that we have a group of us that decide the big button issues, and we all sit in a room and we hash it out. And sometimes we don't agree, but we come out on the other side figuring out what we all agree on and what we feel like God wants us to do with the church. So it's been a really fun adventure. Over that adventure, and even before I started going there full time, as I like to say, I've gotten to go on trips every 6 months or so up until Corona happened. But I've gotten to go to England a couple of times. We got to set up a house church there. It's actually a metal house church, believe it or not. One of the guys who leads this organization called Rev is like, I never know how to explain it. Tommy, it was the lead singer of Sleeping Giant, which is a Christian hardcore band. Actually, it's a shirt that I'm wearing right now. This was from the show that I went to. It was the last show that they ever had in LA. So I was like, I have to go. I've never seen them live. So me and my roommate went. That was one of the fun things that we got to do. But because of the organization that he started, which was kind of to capture some people who were disenfranchised with the church. They didn't like the way that some churches operate, and they wanted to see a different expression. And so it's a bunch of people that love Jesus. A lot of them look very different than maybe a normal church population. Lots of piercings and tattoos and dreads and all different things. And they mostly come from the hardcore scene, but a lot of them don't. There's people like me who don't have any piercings except for my earrings. I don't have any tattoos yet. But within that organization, one of the things that Tommy really did with his band while the band was going, was that they, one of my favorite stories is they were preaching the gospel during one of their sets in, I think, New Zealand, and they didn't have any, kids were getting saved, and they didn't know what to do, so they started baptizing kids in the water that all of the sodas were in previously, and then they got the hose from, the bar next door, and they were like, hey, we're gonna do it, let's do it now, and so crazy stories like that of stuff that they did with their band, and so that carries over, obviously, into their ministry. So we got to set up a metal house church in Birmingham, which is amazing, because it's, the birthplace of metal. In England, and they do half of their church is metal, and they do metal worship with songs that are mostly in the style of metal, and then they also do game nights and do other things, and so so there's that kind of church, and then you have churches that get set up in bars and churches that get set up in the back of tattoo parlors and wherever they can have it to bring people in and share more about Jesus with people. So that's a group of people that I get to travel with, and I've gotten to go every 6 months or so to different places and minister with them, and they've become my tribe, which is awesome. So Rev is a global thing, more so in the U.S., but our church is a part of that, and so we go every year and we do leadership stuff with them. That brings us to where we are today. That's kind of my story of my spiritual journey and how I got here. But as I was looking at all the things that I've done over my life, I forgot that I did some of them. I forgot that some of the things happened. I forgot that they happened the way they did. I've been to Guatemala a few times with the church, and the people there are amazing. But I was thinking back on it, and I was just like, wow. When I look at all those different things that I've gotten the ability to do, they don't really mean a whole lot in themselves. But in the experiences and the ways that God taught me and the things that he did through me in each of those situations is what makes the situations actually worth it. Trying to figure out how I want to word it. One of the main things I've realized over my life is that if Jesus isn't in the center, one, it's not as much fun. And two, there's no lasting impression on it. There's a quote from the movie The Gladiator, and it says, "What we do in this life echoes in eternity." And that's one of my favorite quotes, because whenever I think about what I want to do next or what I want to devote my time to, my question to myself is always is this going to have an eternal impact? And sometimes that's as simple as spending time with a friend, because community is such an important part of the kingdom. Sometimes that's, going on a missions trip. Sometimes that's spending time with your family and really building family, because that's very kingdom. It looks a lot of different ways. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that. And I think what God has shown me over my life is that I have amazing parents. If you know them, you already know that. I grew up here, which is an amazing church, but I realize that over my life, like, there's things that I have understood to be true that either I misunderstood or was taught incorrectly. And I've realized on my own journey that, like, there's parts of things that God has me unlearn, and there's parts of things that God is showing me. Have you ever read, like, a passage in scripture and you thought it said one thing and you go back and you're like, that is not what that said. Like, this is much more drastic than what I thought it said originally. I think that happens with kids' stories a lot. It's like, oh, they brush over some of the, like, oh, we didn't tell you that they cut Goliath's head off. You know, like, oh, we didn't tell you that, you know, they did this or that, you know. We brushed over some of the parts about Noah that, you know, or, I don't know, gloss over Sodom and Gomorrah a little bit. Don't want to let them know that they tried to give their daughters away. You know, like, oh, let's not talk about that part. Like, it's not kid-friendly. I actually had a conversation with someone who's not in this room right now, so. But they were like, yeah, my kids are reading this thing, and I want to talk to them about it because I don't know what they got out of that story, and I really think we need to have a conversation. I was like, I didn't think about that, but you're probably right. Impressionable age. One of the things that's been interesting for me over the past couple of years, as I said, like, unlearning things, and like I said, some of it is things that I thought were true or, like, gathered from, I don't know where we get information from sometimes. I didn't feel like I could be fully myself, which I kind of shared at the beginning. But some of that meant or looked like, I tend to feel very deeply. And that comes out in all different ways. It comes out in getting upset or getting sad. It comes out in the way that, like, I love and care for people. So, like, kind of like all of the different sides of it. And for a while, it felt like it was overdramatic. It felt like it was too much. It felt like it was not the way that you were supposed to act, to be, you know, I don't know, whatever that means in prim and proper and, I don't know, put together. And in 2018, the beginning of 2018, I went through this thing called Encounter, which is very similar to Sozo, if anyone's been through Sozo, but it's an inner healing thing. And they go through all these different steps, and you really kind of have to dig in and put everything in there. A lot of it is, like, going back and just repenting for things that were in your life, but a lot of it's also letting God work through the things that you are holding on to that maybe you didn't realize you're holding on to. And one of the things that I didn't quite realize then but found out later, I've always been one to cry in worship. I've always been one to experience God through emotions. But I started experiencing much more intense emotions because I think I was allowing myself to. I think I was giving myself permission to be who God created me to be. And God continuously started to talk to me about how emotions, for me specifically, were very important, and how being an emotional person who expresses themselves in that way is very important, because that's really a superpower, and I've been considering it a weakness. And I was like, ooh, it's one of those lines that God gives you, and you're like, that's so good because I didn't come up with it. Like, it wasn't me. So over the past couple years, I've been trying to dive into that. A lot of it, not on my own accord. Sometimes it's having so much emotion that incurs, like, a panic attack, which can look very different. And I never gave credence to the fact that the emotions that I was experiencing and the way that I was experiencing them are similar to the way that other people do. And I'm not saying that I am suggesting that we agree with things and saying, like this is a part of my life. But at the same time, I had to give credence to the fact that I had to deal with those things. And when emotions come up, I had to say, okay, I'm very overwhelmed right now. I'm starting to cry. I'm starting to shake. I'm having all these symptoms of things. How do I deal with it? What do I do? And that's not a very pleasant thing. You know, that's not a thing that feels put together. That's not a thing that feels like is okay when you've been, you know, loving Jesus for so long and you feel like you're past that, you know? A little detour. I've been doing business coaching, my business coach has challenged me that sometimes the things that I look at as failures are actually you turning around and going the other way because what was working for you before isn't working for you anymore, or you thought was going to work for you and isn't. So it's like when you're in a maze and you go and hit a wall. If you continue to go towards the wall, you're actually going backwards. Versus if you turn around, yes, you're not taking ground per se, like you're going the opposite direction the way you just came from, but that's actually how you get out. And so I was like, that's such a good analogy. Like, I never thought about that. Like, I just felt like, you know, one step forward, two steps back kind of thing, instead of giving credence to the fact that sometimes when we feel like we're taking a step back, it's because we just have to recalibrate to be able to go forward again. And so it's been a very interesting journey with learning how to deal with emotions and express them more fully, which involves having hard conversations with people because you realize someone hurt you and now you have to go and talk to them and say, hey, this thing that happened a while back, like, I'm still dealing with stuff from that. And that's hard. Like, that takes humility. That takes a lot of stuff where you have to kind of take a step back and be like, okay, we're gonna, like, sit down, we're going to think about it, and now we have to express this properly. So that's been something very interesting that I've been going through and learning about that. And some of that came with a lot of disappointment in prayer, praying for, like, people. I had quite a few friends who were having babies, and their babies passed away prematurely. People's dads who we were, like, contending in prayer for and, like, declaring things and speaking over them, and their parents died. And a lot of the stuff was, like, within a week or two of each other. And just getting really disappointed. And I got to a point where I had to be honest with my emotions, which has been a big part of my journey, being honest with how I'm feeling and realizing that emotions in themselves aren't a bad thing. Emotions exist, but it's how we deal with them when we have them and when we're experiencing them. But especially for me, ignoring them and pretending like they don't exist and not being honest about it actually makes it much worse. Because then it's just kind of tucked back there. And at some point, it boils over and now you feel all the emotions and now you're, you know, reacting to things that you shouldn't be. So during that time, I got really frustrated. This is one of those things that I felt like was practically... what do you call it? Like a sin that can't be forgiven, basically. And it got to this point that I was like, I'm angry with God. Like, I am angry with all of the things that haven't happened. I'm disappointed. And I just had to be honest with myself and sit in it for a little bit. And that was the weirdest experience. Because growing up, I never felt like you could do that. I never felt like that was allowed. I never felt like that was, you know, the right thing to do. And having to give myself freedom to sit in it for a little bit and come out on the other side and realize, like, he is faithful. He is good. And even in that whole time, knowing he's faithful and believing in scripture, but still being, like, working through those emotions and working through that was really powerful for me. Because whatever it is that we're going through or whatever it is we think about God in the moment or realize we're thinking about him that we didn't actually let ourselves believe we were thinking... he can handle it. Like, he's not like, oh man, Rachel's mad at me, like, didn't see that one coming. Like, he's not surprised by it. He's not, like, overwhelmed by even the darkest thing that we've ever done in our life. Like, he's not like, oh my gosh, Lori, how could you? Like, that's not the way he feels about us. And in realizing that we can process even the deepest, darkest parts of our heart with him, that when we let, like, each and every room of our heart be an area that he can come into, that's when he deals with things, and that's when we can help other people as well. So in coming out of the other side of that, and like, right now I would say I'm just kind of in this place of like wooing, where he's just kind of like that beckoning of like, come away with me, or the feeling of like, I don't know how you guys interact with him in worship, or in general, but like I said, for me, I feel a lot, Sometimes I see pictures. Emotions are often a way that I interact with God. Sometimes it's tingly, sometimes a lot of different things. But just sensing like more of a physical presence of God in like, I guess, more of a drastic way than I had for a while. It's been really cool. It's been really cool. So I guess in part of that, which I wasn't planning on going down that full rabbit trail, but I just encourage you guys to be honest with God with wherever you're at and not to be afraid that a part of your heart or a room that you've turned the light off in and you've kind of closed the door and maybe even put a chair up on the handle so he couldn't get in. Like, he's God and can't get in anyways. But at the same time, like, he allows us to open those things to him instead of shoving open the door, you know? So that's been a big part of my journey in emotions in my adult life over the past few years. And the idea of him being preeminent, which is kind of what I was talking about before, about him being the center. And I'm so sad. I wrote down these lyrics to this song that really hit me the other day. But I think it was from The Upper Room. If any of you guys are familiar with The Upper Room, they're amazing. You should listen to them. But the girl was singing, "You're the one thing, not the main thing." And it was just words that kind of sounded interesting at first, but then it hit my heart so deeply that, like, he's not just, like, something that's high priority, like, he's the highest priority. And I think sometimes in our lives, I definitely know in my life, that I get to a place where, like, he's high priority, but he's not the highest, you know? And it's like, oh, well, there's all these other things that are going on that are so much bigger. And it's like, they're really not. They're not bigger. But sometimes they feel like it to us. But sometimes I sit back and I'm like, how do people go through life without Jesus? Like, I just don't understand. And I'm grateful that I've never had to understand that feeling. But I am so blown away that there are people that try to walk through life and the challenges that we face without him. Because I know that I can turn to him. Even when I'm frustrated and don't understand why he's doing what he's doing right now, and I'm copying an attitude, like, I know I can turn to him, and I know that he's faithful, even if my brain isn't telling me that he's faithful right now, like, I know that he is. And so, for me, continuously, through all of the different things that I've done in ministry, and like I said, until I was writing this list, I was forgetting about it. And as I was writing it, I thought about Paul, and not saying that I'm in any way equivocal to Paul, but as I was writing what I thought about the passage in the Philippians, it's Philippians 3, where he's talking, he like lists all the things. It's like the laundry list of all of his accomplishments and accolades. And he's like, but it means nothing. Like, I counted all this loss for knowing God better. And I feel like that's just kind of at the place that I'm at now. I just started a business recently. Well, technically, I'm going to tell you, August of 2018 was like the month, apparently, that everything went down. So it's when I turned in my house keys. It's when I turned in the church key. And it was the first show that I ever hosted for my business. So it was like, oh, and I started a school in Orlando. It's kind of Lake Mary area. I started like a Bethel school that they do over there. I only went for a semester because that's a drive. But it was like all this stuff was happening at the same time. And as God was ending some things, he was beginning other things. And it was this crazy like mix of motion of things that I didn't know how to deal with. And I feel like in all of it, even in that, even in my business, which what I want it to be at some point is a place where people can come and feel comfortable. People of any age. Now, obviously the genre may have certain people that would like to come and not come. We've definitely done a couple of hardcore shows. Actually, we've used the church quite a few times and have bands come and play music. We've done indie rock stuff. We've done a coffee house, spoken word, poetry kind of night. We actually used my parents' patio and did some shows there. Well, so far, one show there. But I'm allowed to come back, so that's good. my dad was actually like, you know what? He's telling all the bands, he's like, next time I'm gonna do this and this, and then we'll have this for you next time. And I'm like, okay, he's not even telling me that I can come back. He's like telling the bands that they can come back. I'm like, this is another level of hospitality. Like, to use their patio. We did a beach bonfire, so we've been doing some stuff. But what I eventually want it to look like is I want it to be a place. I want to own a house where I can have the bands come and stay if they're from out of town. I want it to be a place where they can shower and do laundry and all that kind of stuff, and just be a place to minister to people when they come in to the area, because I really love this area, and I plan on being here for a really long time unless God has other ideas. He hasn't told me those yet, so I guess we'll find out when we get there. But to have a place where people can feel like it's a home away from home, and to let them know that the reason why that is and why it feels the way that it does is because of Jesus. But my business as a whole isn't quote-unquote Christian, but I kind of like that, you know, it's a little sneaky that way. So let me see if there's anything else that I wanted to touch on real quick. I think that's basically it. Just the idea that, like, God is in everything if we let him be there. And, I mean, if you look at some Psalms, like, he really is anyways, whether we let him be or not. But more so the fact that, like, he can show up the most when we give him permission. Not that he doesn't show up when we haven't, like, asked him to come, like, he's everywhere. He's in us. But at the same time, like, there's another level of that that we can invite him into. And so I think of all the things that I would like to leave with you guys is just the fact that don't be afraid to unlearn things if God's kind of poking at an area of your heart. And don't be afraid to let him open a door that you haven't let him open in a while or that you haven't ever let him open. I feel like the past year or so, God's just kind of been disassembling things. And a lot of it is ideas that I've taken as truth. And I honestly don't even know where the source of them is sometimes. But he slowly disassembles the lies and replaces them with truth. And he slowly takes things and changes them. And it's interesting for me, as I was talking about this duality, or maybe like multi-complex, I don't know, life that we have. I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels out of place sometimes, or that doesn't fit into a certain group or area, but that God created all of us uniquely the way that he wanted to. And that doesn't mean that there's not parts of our lives that need to be worked on, because it's not glorifying God. But what I'm saying is that, like, he made me to be a person that likes hardcore music. And my dad and I had this argument when I was younger, because I wasn't allowed to listen to non-Christian music. So I found a church that played hardcore music that was Christian. And then when my dad said, what is that? I said, it's Christian music. You can't tell me that I can't listen to it, because that was the rule. And he was like, let me see that. How do you know that's what they're saying? I'm like, that, here's the lyrics inside the little, they used to, I don't know if they still do. I don't really buy CDs anymore. The little pamphlet inside that has the lyrics in it. I'm like, see, he's like, how do you know that's what they're saying? I'm like, no, we're not playing this game. Like, you said that I could listen to it if it was Christian. Because I didn't used to like worship music. Now I love worship music. Can't get enough worship music. But I like all different genres. And so my life has never really looked the way that a lot of people's do. And even people in my office are like, you're like, what kind of music? You're doing what for your business? And I'm like, yeah, you know, we just had this poetry one, and now we're doing hardcore. And they're like, what? Like, I don't understand. I'm like, it's fine. Like, you don't have to understand. But the fact that, like, I am in a place where that's the sphere that I can influence. That I found a place where I don't know that much about music, and I oftentimes feel very out of place. It's something my business coach is working with me on, is that it doesn't have to look exactly the way that you think it should look, and it doesn't have to be perfect, and you're allowed to make mistakes, and that doesn't mean it's a failure. It just means that you have room to improve and opportunities to grow. There's a lot of opportunity sometimes. but the fact that, like, we all have different unique parts of us. And, like this quote is talking about, is that when we let our light shine, it lets other people shine as well. Because we're not trying to be someone else and what someone else is gifted in. We're being what we're gifted in. And that's needed. There's so many scriptures about, you know, being different part of the body and how the hand and the eye can't be the same thing. Like, you need every single piece of it, and not every piece of it maybe gets the most glory or the most airtime or the most FaceTime. I don't know. not every piece of the puzzle always gets highlighted. But at the same time, they're all important. I'm going to leave you guys with this story, I think. Have you guys watched The War Room?
No.
Yeah, a lot of people? Okay. If you haven't watched it, it's basically this movie, a Christian movie, that I'm not even going to be able to remember the whole entire plot. But basically, there's this family or this couple that are going through a hard time, and like relationally. And there's this older woman, and she is like this amazing warrior, like intercessor. And she teaches the main character, even though she's kind of the main character, but she teaches the woman like how to pray and how to intercede. And she just shows her basically what that looks like. And that is a very poor rendition of what that story is. So go watch it if you haven't seen it. But what I found out about the woman who played the role of the intercessor was she had tried to be an actress her whole entire life, and nothing was coming to her. And all the roles that were offered to her always had some sort of, like, not hidden agenda, but, like, it wasn't the pure role that she wanted. Like, she didn't feel comfortable walking into that movie or playing that part or doing that thing. So she turned down a bunch of things. And so she never got famous. And so she ended up being at a random church that she had moved. I think she had moved to. But at the end of it, someone found her and they said, this woman needs to play this part. And then now she is well known to a degree, you know, and she had the exact part. Like, God had almost like saved her this part. I think they even might have moved some stuff so that it could be her because of her schedule or something. But I should have looked up a story, but I didn't plan on sharing it. But what she said at the end of it was like, I've waited my whole life to have a role and to do this, and I had practically given up on it because none of these things were glorifying God in the way I wanted to glorify him with my life. And she had waited, and then God gave her this part that was so perfect for her that practically was like handcrafted for her to play. And so part of that is cool because it's like, it doesn't matter what age you are. It doesn't matter what stage of life you're in. It doesn't matter what opportunities you feel like you miss. Like, if God has something for you, you have time to step into it. Which sounds somewhat silly coming from, you know, a 29-year-old, but at the same time, like, there are things in my life that I wish I would have done already, or there's things in my life, like I said, that I, like, always kind of waited till the end to do. I didn't get my, I mean, it's not like it's that late, but I was a person that didn't give my driver's license when I was 16 because I didn't get my permit till I was 16 because I wasn't ready yet. And by the time I was ready, my dad's sitting in the car, like, doing work because he's like, why am I even here with you? Like, you don't need me except for legally. Technically, I'm supposed to be in this car with you. But at the same time, like, why am I here? So, like, whatever, wherever you feel like you are, like, glorifying God with your life is never a bad decision. In the choices that you make and thinking about putting God at the center and, like, how those choices are going to echo in eternity. Like, that is never a bad decision. And God always has, like, better to come in those things. So if I can leave you guys with anything, is that it's never too late for those things. And God can get glory in anything. In even the most tragic situations, I've heard of God getting the glory. And so I guess I will say this. Even in the way that my dad ended up coming to know God was because a little boy passed away. And it was tragic, and it was nothing about it was okay. But through those stories and through that, through those events is what brought him to God. And I wouldn't be the person I am today if he wasn't who he is, you know? And so I think, I won't say I think. What God told me before I came up here today was that I don't realize how important my story is. And I feel like that's not just for me, it's for you guys. Is the fact that, like, we don't give enough credit to what God's doing in our lives sometimes. And we think, oh, it's fine. He's just, you know, we're going through some stuff and I'm learning things about God. But it's like the person next to you might not have learned that lesson yet. The person next to you might not know the things that you know about God. Because we all have different journeys, and we all know and interact with God in different ways, and we learn different things out of situations. And so I'm really grateful for this community. I'm really blessed that there's so many people here tonight, and I feel like this is not a one-time occurrence where you guys all get together and get to be community like this. So I know some of this sounds a little like you already know it, but at the same time, like, I just want to remind you how important your story is. And just because I'm the one up here tonight doesn't make my story any more important than yours. It just means apparently tonight was my night to share mine. So thank you guys for listening. I love to talk, so if anyone has questions, you're more than welcome to come share with me.
Well, before you do that, pray for the group in part.
Ooh.
To the group.
Okay.
In decree, declare, and impart, please.
Okay. Do you want me to keep recording? Okay.
Yes.
God, I thank you so much for all the women in this room. I thank you for each of their hearts and their desire to know you more deeply. God, I ask that you would just encounter them wherever they are. I know this keeps coming up, but God, I just ask that you would remind each and every woman in here that regardless of where her journey has taken her, that you have better to come. Not just better, but best. God, that you are so much bigger than we know and that we can understand, and that the way that you weave our story together with other people's is amazing. So I ask in those places that we don't see you right now, God, I ask that you would reveal yourself, but also that we would give up the right to understanding, that we would give up the right to thinking we know what's best, that we would give up whatever right it is that we think we have, and we would just come humbly before you, God, saying that you are so faithful and you are so good, and there is absolutely nobody like you. I ask that you would give wisdom for each and every situation that is coming up, God, that these women would be known as pillars in their community. That whether that's their family or their workplace whatever it is that they influence, God, that they would be the type of people that other people look up to and come to because of their light shining so bright. God, I give them permission to be exactly who you've created them to be, regardless of what anyone has ever spoken over them or regardless of what lies they've taken in to be their own. God, I ask that you would speak truth and that you would show them who you've created them to be and the unique features that they have that are supposed to be such a blessing to the people around them. especially those things that they've discounted and said aren't worth it, or are too much, or are too little. God, that you would reveal exactly the attributes and the things that you have put in their lives and like created them to be from the beginning. I'm thinking about scripture that talks about it's Ephesians 2:10, that we are your workmanship. God, that you have created us so amazingly unique and so amazingly necessary for community. God, that we can't do it alone, but that we're also called to understand who we are as individuals. So God, I just release that over this community, that they would see how their piece fits in the community, but knowing that it doesn't have to be the same as everybody else's. Knowing that them being unique is actually very purposeful. I just ask even now that you would minister to hearts. That you would show them what being a daughter of the King looks like and the access that they have to heaven. The access that they have to your heart. And what they get to ask for from their daddy. God, that you don't give us stones or snakes. God, that when we ask for something, even if the answer is no, or later, that it's because there's something better to come. So God, I just release what I feel like has been placed on my life in understanding the nature of what a daughter looks like. And that asking is not only permissible, but it's encouraged. So even tonight, God, I ask that these amazing women of God would petition heaven for the things that are on their heart. God, that they would come up to you, sit on your lap, and ask you for the things that are deepest down, not because you don't know them already, but because it's how you partner with us and how you allow us to partner with you in making those needs and those wants known. I ask that tonight, in whatever I've said, would spark something in their hearts to be a little more intimate with you and go deeper. God, I ask that you would remind them how important their story is. You're so amazing, God. We ask this in your son's name. Amen. Surprised I got through talking without crying, but...